Week 9. Welcome to week 9 of our podcast and of the lockdown on the country for COVID-19. The good news is we're starting to unlock and things are starting to happen again. Yes, there is life at the end of the tunnel, and I'm not going to get political on this, but there are good things happening. I saw an article. I won't mention the name of the paper, but it's from Washington. And they said that, oh, there's a spike in cases happening in the state of Tennessee and the state of Texas. Well, they're the first two states to open. And I'm thinking, is that real or is that fake news? So I checked out in the state of Tennessee, there was a spike in a prison. And it went from one person to 9 people. And they said there was a 1,000% increase in the number of cases in Tennessee. So don't believe it, folks. We're getting better. We're coming out of it. Let's start coming back to life. Our practice was down to like, after the COVID-19 hit, we went down to about 50%. Then we got hit with a tornado right down the street from our office. We went down to about 35%. And we're probably back up now to 65 or 70%. So things are coming back in. Every week, there's more and more phone calls, patients getting back to life, wanting to get their health back. So we're continuing on. We're going to bring you some very valuable information because I have two very special guests this week or in tonight's show. Let me introduce to you two important people that you're going to want to listen to. These are two of the principals from HBK Accounting. One of them, Gary Lowenstern. Hey, Gary, how are you?
I'm good. Mike, how are good? You?
Good. Gary's been an accountant for 35 years. He's been my accountant for 20 of those 35 years. You also have certifications in appraisal of businesses and other things, correct?
Correct.
And you are a principal and a member of the HBK Healthcare Solutions, probably because of working with me. But you brought the big guns with you. We have Michael DeLuca. So, Michael, you've been an accountant for 12 years. You are a principal and director of HBK's Healthcare Solutions program. Am I correct?
That is correct.
So Gary's a very smart guy. He never goes to a gunfight with a knife. He always brings a bazooka, and you are his bazooka.
I play the role.
Good. So you're in Florida, correct, Michael?
I am, Southwest Florida.
And Gary, yeah, Fort Myers. And Gary, you're in the Philadelphia area, correct?
Correct.
Okay, good. So you're in a little bit more of a hot situation than not temperature-wise, but just COVID-wise. But hopefully it's coming better up there. My family members says there's still a lot of fear, but they're seeing some activity as well.
Yeah, they're starting to open some things, but social distancing still remains the primary idea and to keep us all safe. So,
well, to give you an idea, in our neck of the woods, we're in Yamhill County, Oregon. I got kind of locked here during the crisis. And I don't know anybody in this state that knows anybody that has COVID-19. So that's how we are. And people are going to Lowe's. You want to go to a party? Go to Lowe's. It's packed every time you go. All right. So we're going to talk about a couple things. And you have to forgive us because we're not experts at this like you are, the two of you. So let's talk about the first thing first, the PPP, the Payroll Protection Plan. So tell us the updates on that. People have been starting to get checks. People are getting them in their bank accounts. Some people haven't gotten checks. So let's talk about that. What can you shed light on about it?
Michael, you want to run with that first?
Yeah. You know, the PPP was definitely the most headlined program relief measure that was part of the CARES Act that was signed into law towards the end of March. A lot of rush, a lot of angst, a lot of chaos on the front end, we call it, when it's applying for the loan. I hope that a lot of your members in the audience here today applied for that loan. There's certainly in the headlines there was the loan forgiveness part. That's why there was such a craze, because there's a component there that is likely to turn into a grant. It's not going to be a loan. It's going to be a grant of monies at that point. Now you're looking at most of the loans that have been processed or have been funded and are getting funded. And then we're switching attention mostly now to the loan forgiveness piece, the back end, and how that's going to look, right? So when you get the funds, you got that 8-week period. That 8-week clock starts when the money hits your bank account.
Got it. So I know when you say loan forgiveness, everybody's ears perk up because it's like the federal government put out a sign that said free money.
Yeah.
And people scrambled for it. And banks scrambled for it. And what's happened is some people like us, you know, we have multiple businesses, and a couple of our businesses, we got notified by the bank, sorry, we're out of funds. And then we got notified a lot, and we got emails like this, sorry, we're out of funds, you might want to try another bank. Well, that puts you in a pickle. So then you get an email later, oh, there's a second stimulus and we might have funds. And then you get the same email. Well, there's going to be a scramble for the funds. You might want to apply to another bank. We went through this a couple of times, but we finally got through where they said, okay, we have the funds. So one, what's the advice to the people who keep getting those emails, we might be out of funds? And then why don't you explain to us exactly what we have to do to comply with that loan forgiveness portion of it?
Sure. If you're getting an answer right now that says they're out of funds, I would be questioning the bank. We have not seen any indication at this point with that second tranche of funding put in place last week. We haven't seen that the funds are running thin. You know, in the first program, it certainly captured a lot of headlines that were out there. The bigger loans, a lot of the big loans got funded, which ate into that initial $349 billion that was allocated to this program.
Wow.
Yeah. So then now, once the big loans are funded, now you have a lot of the smaller loans or smaller by average dollar volume in this second tranche. And we're seeing those getting processed even at a much more rapid clip right now. So if you're getting that answer that it's out of the funds right now here today, I would be questioning the bank and I would be pressing your financial institution.
Well, I can tell you in this whole mess, we started to learn which banks were really actually people friendly and which banks were not people friendly. You know, there's a lot of the smaller banks. Well, I guess you guys tell me if I'm right about this. I believe that small business makes up the largest employer in the United States. And small business is usually the smaller guys, a couple million down. Am I right about that?
Yeah. Small business. We define small to medium sized companies, 5 to 50 million in revenue, and small certainly on the lower end of that 5 million and less. And
right.
I agree, it's the heartbeat of America.
Yeah, so a lot of these smaller banks actually came to the rescue for those companies and got that process correctly. So that's really good advice to have. Now, people are going, well, I definitely want to qualify for the loan forgiveness. I mean, who wouldn't, right? So what do they have to do that? They're probably going through this right now as the show is being aired. What steps do they have to take and make sure they take correctly?
Yeah, so there's three main costs, really, buckets that are going to be eligible for loan forgiveness. The payroll cost is the biggest one. That's defined as gross wages. So no employer taxes are included in that number. It's the gross wages you pay out. That's capped at an annualized rate of $100,000 per employee. You also have benefits that you can pay, so health and dental insurance. You have 401k and retirement benefits. Vacation accruals or sick pay leave, as long as that sick pay leave isn't under the expanded FMLA guidelines that were issued earlier in the month of March as it relates to coronavirus aid. And then you also have rent. Rent's another bucket of potential loan forgiveness costs or interest made on mortgage payments. What's interesting to note in the PPP, especially for healthcare providers in the audience today, as it's defined and what we know today, it's interest pursuant to a loan agreement. So it could mean, as we interpret it right now, that it could be interest paid on equipment loans. So it's very in a medical practice. So if we're talking you're paying your normal equipment payments, the interest on that may be forgivable from what we know today. The third bucket there is utility cost. So you have payroll cost, your rent / mortgage or interest on debt payments, and utility cost. The nuance there, the first tranches of loan forgiveness really is, or hurdles rather, is no more than 25% of the forgiven amount can be made up of those last two buckets. So no more than 25% of the loan forgiveness amount can be made up of rent or the interest payments.
So 75 to payroll.
At least 75% of the amount has to be payroll.
Okay. So I think everybody tracks with that. We heard stuff earlier on in the program about the number of employees you have. You know, I guess that would be measured out by the amount of payroll you're paying because there's a cap on the salaries you could be paying. But should people be wondering or worrying about the number of employees they have versus what they had before COVID-19?
They should be, because that's a great lead into the second kind of hurdle you have to get over. So there's this 75-25% split. The second hurdle now is a full-time equivalent comparison to either February 15th or June 30th of 2019, or the first 2 months of this year is the two most common. So you got to look at your average monthly full-time equivalent employees, which the only place that's ever defined really is in the Affordable Care Act back from 2010 or Obamacare. So that's the guidance that they're leaning on for full-time equivalent. If your full-time equivalents decrease upon loan forgiveness, you are automatically going to take a haircut in a pro rata percentage of that decrease.
So it's not going to disqualify forgiveness. It's going to disqualify a percentage of forgiveness.
That's correct.
Got it. So then they just have to make sure they have similar number, same number, more, less that they had before.
To not take that automatic haircut, at least has to be the same amount of full-time equivalents. If it's more, you're not going to get rewarded or penalized. You may get rewarded by more payroll being forgiven up to the loan.
Wow. So then how about somebody like, and this is not our clients, but some businesses were on a decline when it happened, before it happened. And are they going to take a hit on that?
Yeah, so that's where those two periods come into play. You know, if your average full-time equivalent in January and February this year, which is really pre-COVID crisis, is less than what it was maybe a year ago during this time, you'd want to use those first 2 months as a period of testing, right, instead of a year ago.
Now, here's a question, and maybe it's a silly question, but when you applied for this loan, they were factoring that in, and they had to use one method or the other.
Yeah.
Do you have to use the same method that the bank used?
No indication that tells us right now that you have to use the same method. It even gets a little quirkier in that, because now they've come out after most people have applied and said, well, what we really wanted in your employee count is total employees, not full-time equivalents. So on the application, if you have 50 heads on your payroll, but 25 of them are part-time, they wanted you to show 50 on the application. But when you go to calculate your full-time equivalents, you want to get it right that you're going to count those part-timers as a piece of a full-time equivalent, not a whole.
And it depends on how much part-time they are. If they're half a time, then they're half a.
That's right. The ACA defines that as 30 hours or more is equal to one full-time equivalent.
The good news for Colleen and I is three of our businesses were on the hiring phase right before this happened. We're just getting into it. So we're still actually on the hiring phase in all three of those businesses. So we should come out pretty good at that number calculation. So Gary, is there anything that you want to add in that Michael and I haven't covered?
Well, I kind of wanted to talk about something that more on the 30,000 foot level. We get a lot of questions from our clients, and I'm sure a lot of people on this today are asking the same kinds of questions. That one, we still don't have official guidance from the SBA or the Treasury Department with a lot of these specific questions. And people are asking questions like, well, I'm not going to use all of my loan proceeds. They're not all going to be forgiven, I should say. So I'm going to have a loan at the end of the 8 week period. What can I do with that extra money? Which is a really good question. If you're going to have to pay it back as a loan over a 2 year period at 1% interest, and it's a loan, you would think you can use the money as you see fit. But we go back to what was the spirit of the law. The spirit of the law was for the government to help and subsidize small businesses to get through an 8 week period of their payroll and occupancy costs.
Right.
So if you have a loan at the end because you weren't able to use all of the proceeds for those costs, we feel that if you continue to use that money for those type of expenditures, even though it's a loan, you still should be okay, and you shouldn't run afoul with the SBA or the bank as inappropriately using the money. There's a lot of fear out there now, and the media is based really behind it, but there's a lot of our clients that are fearful that they're going to be accused of using the money inappropriately.
Right.
While Michael and I haven't spoken about this, and maybe his opinion is a little bit different than mine and who I speak to, I think we're making our clients feel better that if they're using the money for the same type of costs, they're really not going to run afoul. You can't take the money we don't believe in and pay off a loan that might be more expensive for even equipment or any other loan, but you have
or a boat.
Right. So I like to talk about that with the clients just to make them feel better. And the other thing with forgiveness is we believe that the banks are going to be the ultimate decision maker as to what amount is forgiven. And
really?
And we saw on the way in, and you even alluded to it, Mike, that the banks are all treating this different. There were no two applications that were handled the same way. And the banks are going to be the police on the back end for forgiveness. So we're, again, hoping for some really tight guidance so that we can plan accordingly. Because what we're doing with our clients is we're in touch with them on a regular basis as they're going through this 8-week period. I know in our office, we've developed a master schedule of all our clients and the amount of loan they got and the date that it starts and then the date the 8 weeks end, so that we can be in touch with them to help them through this to maximize the amount of forgiveness.
So the 8 weeks starts when you get the money?
That is correct.
Okay. Got it. I'm glad you brought that up because I didn't even think about that. Like, okay, it's a really low interest rate. Why don't I just take the loan and buy a plane? You know, and unless you're in the airline business, that's not a smart move. So.
Right.
Okay. Well, good. I wasn't thinking that. We were just thinking payroll because that was our main thing. Right now, we're investing in employees.
And that's the spirit of the law.
Yeah.
And so keep your employees employed and off the unemployment lines.
So it's always good to have really smart, really honest advisors in your camp. So thank you for being on this show. So anything else on the PPP or should we move on to the EIDL?
You know, I'll have one more question or answer really that we know today. I'll second Gary and everything he said. There's a lot of answers being provided on a daily basis, but a common one we're fielding from clients, especially in the medical space, is, well, what if I go to reach out to someone I may have already laid off or furloughed, and I offer them a position back once I get funded with the PPP because I want my payroll costs and I want my full-time equivalent numbers back up. What if they've already claimed unemployment? In unemployment, they're making more money now than what I'm going to come back and offer them at the same
time. That's a real thing. We've actually encountered that.
Yeah, so this was a really big issue that we were pushing as an industry to get guidance on because a lot of concern was being raised. The SBA came out this week, actually about 3 days ago, and said if you have a formal written offer to an employee of yours that you have previously let go and they are on unemployment and they decline your offer, you are not going to be penalized in your full-time equivalent at that point for that employee.
So start writing letters.
So if you want to do that and get them back and you're funded, start writing the letters, get it legally documented, absolutely have good faith, spirit of the law, hold into it. And on the flip side of that, that employee may be ineligible for their unemployment now.
Right. I understand that. So, you know, we're not looking to switch our guys. We like the people we had. We were bummed this whole thing happened. We want those people back and more. But there are some people that have asked me, what if it's not the same employee? Is that a factor?
Nothing we see today says that it has to be the same person, same body. It's just pure headcount numbers on a full-time equivalent basis. That is what we know today.
Got it. Well, I hate to say this because I never really think I've encountered one, but it sounds like it was a really well-written law.
Yeah. Gary and I are both laughing with a little bit of a, for as rushed as it was, in meaning rushed, it got out there really quick, right? The administration certainly put it out there in a rapid fashion. It was very legalese, but it wasn't terrible. I'm saying that it wasn't terrible.
Well, yeah. Like what's the old saying? Two things you never want to see made: sausage or a law.
Or a law.
So, but you know, you start digging into this because with healthcare, when that law passed 10 years ago, doctors didn't start digging into it. We just started feeling the effects of it, and when we started feeling the effects of it, we're like, this is way different than the spirit of what we thought it was. But people are digging into this one really fast because, one, they don't have anything else to do, and two, it's majorly affected their income and their business. And I'm surprised at how much of this law you go, yeah, that's pretty fair. Yeah, that's a good idea. And it's just more than you normally would expect. So thank you. All right, so let's talk about the economic injury disaster loan. We heard a lot about that in the beginning, and I don't know anybody that applied for it. So what's happening with that?
Well, I'll jump in and say a few words about this. That was the program that came out first, and people saw that. And if you recall, that's the one that had the $10,000 that you will receive within 3 days of applying. and you don't have to pay the $10,000 back, and you can use it for anything, any expense of your business.
Including a boat.
And then the PPP loan came out and right after that, and that seemed to be a better deal because it had the forgiveness component, as you said earlier, the free money, which is always a better deal. And when comparing the two, people started to see that the EIDL loan was more of a traditional loan that had a longer payback. I think you could pay back up to 30 years and a higher interest rate of up to 3.75%. And it had more of the traditional loan issues where you had to be approved and they wanted financial statements and tax returns and even possibly personal guarantees and collateral. And that became a real loan versus the PPP loan, which had the forgiveness component, a lower interest rate, a quicker payback period. So as Michael and I were talking before, very few people ended up going through with the EIDL loan in the full version, but they did apply. And we were talking earlier that all these weeks later, people are now starting to get their $10,000.
Really?
3 days, as they were promised.
It was 3 days. They didn't just tell you how many days were in between the 3 days. Well, you know, entepreneurs like myself, the last thing we want is another loan or another credit card. You walk through the airport on Monday morning and they're trying to push those credit cards, and like 99 out of 100 people are like, nope, last thing I need. Right. And that's kind of, I guess, how people responded to the economic disaster or injury, disaster recovery, whatever it is. So it's still in play, though.
It is in play. And maybe some of the people, because it was the first thing there and people were desperate and they were upset and concerned about all the things that have we've been discussing for the last 2 months, and they jumped at it and made application, and we'll see if they can do both.
So, okay, right. That was my question. My next question is, so I want to make sure you're saying there's no forgiveness component of the EIDL?
There is not.
Okay, got it.
And just to backtrack a little bit, if you did get that $10,000 of the EIDL loan, the free $10,000 component, that will be subtracted from the amount forgiven in the PPP loan.
Got it. So it's not like you can get double money.
Right. So you will be paying that back.
Now, there's not a $10,000 max on that EIDL, but the $10,000, if you don't get the PPP, you get the $10,000 forgiven.
That's correct. I think the max was about $2 million, so it was pretty high.
Got it. And I can see some people needing that because there are, I mean, you know, somebody who has a lot of tech and not many employees, you know, the PPP doesn't really help somebody like that. If they had to shut down and lost a lot of income, but they didn't have a ton of employees, but they had a lot of services being performed. I was thinking about that the other night. You know, we have a driver out here in Oregon, great guy, we love him, but his whole business is pretty much, he's got three cars and two other drivers, and we're starting to think that PPP is not going to save him because nobody's going back and forth to the airport. And so I'm hoping that he did something to supplement his income. But something like that could be something that would possibly help somebody like that. Okay, good. All right. Well, then we have a couple other things which I didn't even know about, the FICA deferral. You know, I didn't even hear about that. But Colleen did. She puts her ear more towards that because she handles the payroll aspect of it and deals with you guys more. But why don't you talk to us about that? Unless there's more on the EIDL. Is there anything more you want to cover there?
No, I don't think so. Other than the only thing I'll add to that, with the EIDL loan, you can use the money for more than payroll and rent and mortgage interest and loan interest. You can use it for pretty much any business expense, pay your payables, pay for supplies and other things that you need for your practice. So it gives you more flexibility in what you can do with the money.
Perfect. Now, how about this FICA deferral? That's something that, you know, I didn't even know about, but you, from what I understood, you told me before the show, people can spread their FICA payments out over the next 2 years. Is that correct?
It is. And Michael, I'll jump in here and you can add in afterwards. So every time you have one of the people listening, one of your business people have a payroll, they have to, they withhold federal taxes and FICA and Medicare tax from the employee portion of the loan. And then as many business owners have learned early on, they have to match the FICA and Medicare and remit all that to the various taxing agencies, the IRS or the state. So they came out and said that the FICA match, which is the 6.2% that is capped somewhere around $135,000, $140,000, but that FICA match, you can defer paying it in from your current payroll and hold it in your bank, use it to help get through this difficult time, and then you can take all that accumulated savings and deferral and pay 50% of it by December 31st of 2021, and the other 50% by December 31st of 2022. So for the, and this is just experience coming in and talking to our clients, or what I've been talking to, the smaller businesses are like, okay, I get it, that helps, but it's not really going to make a difference in my survival and running my business. And I'm concerned that 2 years down the road, I'm going to have to come up with money I wasn't planning on. I'm just going to pay it now. But I work with one very large business that has a very substantial payroll, and it's a real number. It certainly is a real number with their several hundred employees that they get to defer. So for the audience here today, I think it's something to think about. I think it's something to talk to their accountants about and internally and quantify and see if it makes sense for you to do.
I'm sure we're going to get this question probably from employees. And what you're saying is only the employer portion can be deferred. The employee has to pay theirs.
Yeah, the portion that comes out for the employee has to be remitted to the IRS currently. It's only the employer 6.2% FICA match, the 1.45% Medicare match still has to be remitted currently.
Okay, got it. All right.
The only other caveat I want to throw in there is if you have a PPP loan, once you've been notified by the bank that some or all of your loan has been forgiven, you can no longer participate in the FICA deferral program.
So if I got my loan last month and I still haven't been notified that I'm forgiven, then I'm still able to participate.
That's correct. The program.
But once I get, go ahead.
The program goes till December 31st, so it's for the remainder of 2020.
Right.
And you can continue to defer that FICA match until the 8-week period has expired of your PPP loan, and you are then submit your information to the bank to find out how much you've been forgiven. Once you're notified of how much you've been forgiven, you can no longer participate. So they're really independent programs, but they're tied together.
Yeah. So then that's a good point. At the end of 8 weeks, it's the duty of the employer to apply for the forgiveness? Or the company?
Yeah. So if under the PPP, what we know is you have to then, at the end of the 8 weeks, we're hoping the financial institutions are proactive and saying, hey, your 8 weeks is up. You know, it's done. Come to us. If not, you got to know and you have to go to the bank to apply for the loan forgiveness piece. The banks have 60 days to review your file and either agree or disagree with that loan forgiveness calculation.
But during that 60 days, you can still defer because you haven't been notified yet, correct?
That's correct.
Okay, so 8 weeks of 60 days. So basically we're talking like 4 months from the time you get your check. You're probably gonna have to start paying back or contributing the 6.5% FICA.
It might come quicker when you are, and maybe I just got a little lost in your math, but once you're notified after the 8 week period.
Which is 60 days.
Yeah.
It's the next 60 days. So you can get notified in 10 days or 20 or the full 60. It depends on your bank at that point.
Got it. So when they say, hey, here's, you're forgiven or you're not forgiven, that's when you have to stop participating.
That's correct.
Got it. Okay. All good stuff to know, because a lot of the stuff I haven't heard before, I guess it wasn't even understood before. So, it's pertinent timing.
Yeah, and I'll jump in. There's another relief program that wasn't here too that really got under the radar because of the PPP. Again, that was the big bazooka. That was the big gun. There's an employer retention credit too for payroll, but if you participate in the PPP, you cannot participate in employer retention tax credit. So
okay.
If you didn't go down the PPP route, note all wages that you pay to employees, so up to a $10,000 max per employee for the remainder part of this year, you're going to receive a 50% tax credit on your payroll taxes that you pay to the IRS for the remainder of 2020.
If you didn't participate
in the PPP. If you didn't participate in the PPP, that's correct.
Got it. Okay, that makes a lot of sense. Again, another aspect of this law, I go, well, that sounds pretty fair. All right. Anything more on the FICA deferral?
I think okay. That's pretty much it.
So now we want to talk about the HHS, and this is pertaining to Medicare. So I imagine, Michael, you're going to be doing a lot of that one, right?
Yeah, a lot of this. You know, it was, again, this was on April 10th. So I'll back up one step. As part of the CARES Act, so the same piece of legislation that gave us the PPP and the FICA deferral that we're talking about and the employer retention tax credit also provided $100 billion earmarked specifically for the healthcare industry. So we didn't know what that meant. They were figuring it out. They tagged HHS to disperse and you know, kind of promulgate these funds in the best way they saw fit. So I was literally on a call with Deloitte, one of the largest accounting firms and where I started my career, with their national head of health and human services and based in DC on Thursday, April 9th. And she was kind of divulging the program, but even she said, hey, I have no idea what's happening. And then you get to the morning of Friday, April 10th, and people started seeing random deposits into their bank accounts for quite a large sums of money from HHS. HHS earmarked $30 billion and they distributed $26 billion on Friday, April 10th for Medicare Part A and B providers that do Medicare fee-for-service billings. So they just automatically put money into providers' bank accounts, working through MACs and what they already information had on hand.
Not based on any service, just because they do services.
Just because they do services. Basically, HHS came out and said, last year we issued $484 billion in Medicare fee-for-service payments to providers. We just did a simple math calculation that whatever we reimbursed you for fee-for-services in 2019, we divided that by $484 billion and multiplied it by $30 billion. And that's the money that showed up in your bank account on Friday, April 10th.
Wow.
Holy moly. Not a loan. That is a grant, a pure flat out grant.
And it's just for your participation in Medicare.
That's it. It was automatic.
And Medicare can't audit that back from you.
Well, that's the other piece. So you had to attest. So if you got those monies and haven't attested to it yet, you need to attest within 45 days of receipt. You either received it on April 10th or April 17th. There was a small.
What are you attesting to?
You're attesting to a 10-page document. It's funny because you would think you're attesting to certain things. Certain things are like you can't use those funds for any other relief measures that you have gotten. So if you're in the PPP program, you just need great accounting controls and delineation that you're using the PPP money for the payroll costs and the rent and utilities. You're using right. The HHS money for everything else. So for supplies and operational expenditures, everything non-related to PPP. We have programs in place for helping our clients to adequately account for this as these 8 weeks especially go on so that we prove it, because you do have to attest and you have to subject yourself to almost like a Medicare audit is what we're thinking. They've been very vague.
You say that to a doctor, they get very scared and start going, I don't know if I want this gift from Medicare. That's how I would react.
Yeah, Mike, you're on it. And I was even hesitant to say the word Medicare audit, because I know that's a no-no in a lot of land. But that's what we're thinking, because you had to attest. I mean, no one asked for this money. It just showed up in the bank. So it's
right.
Like they provided the money, and then you have to go to attest. You could pay it back if you want. But the attestation is you're going to submit reports to them. They haven't defined what kind of reports those are yet. If you received more than $150,000, you have to submit the reports within 10 days after quarter end. So by July 10th, again, we don't know what kind of enhanced reports they're looking for. That's why we're just kind of taking a more conservative approach, saying, hey, just brace for the worst. It may or may not be like a Medicare audit, but we
right.
Want to brace for that. The other things you have to attest to is kind of, you can't advocate for gun control. You can't outperform abortions.
Say that again.
Yeah, within this bill, if you receive the money and go attest, you have to attest that no monies are going to be spent for lobbying for gun control.
For gun control.
It's kind of a nuance in there. It's a weird stipulation to put into an HHS relief program.
What if you're an advocate of no gun control?
That you just have to attest that you're not going to promote gun control. So that's the only thing.
Now, did I mention earlier this sounds like a very fair law? Because one of my top hobbies is shooting. I love to fish, and my second hobby is shooting.
Yeah,
that's really bizarre. You just blew my mind, Michael. It just blew my mind.
HHS, okay. They have a page, a website that you can click on. We've been shooting our clients there. It's a 10-page terms and conditions, but there is some little quirky things like that. Again, you can't use money to lobby. You can't use money to perform abortions. Those are kind of the main headlines in there.
Right. Okay. This has been quite a show. Anything else, Gary, you want to add to that, or is that pretty much summing it up?
Yeah, Michael's the expert on them, and he certainly went over everything I'm aware of, and then a little more. I wasn't aware of the gun issue.
Okay, so for our clients, who we do have clients see a lot of Medicare patients, if you just magically ended up with money in your account, you have to go and attest. So working with your accountant is very important. This is not the time to try to figure it out on your own, but have a professional help you figure out that when you sign that attest that you're using that money the right way.
That's absolutely correct. And if you did receive that money, and if you're in the audience, there was also a second tranche that was released a couple of weeks ago, another $20 billion. So then HHS came out and said another $20 billion for Medicare providers. Now, in this second $20 billion, basically, they said, we've already provided the fee-for-service. This was geared towards hospitals and facilities that don't do fee-for-service type stuff. They have cost reports. They submit other documentation for Medicare. We're telling our clients, though, there could be additional reimbursements. You've already attested. There's nothing further you have to attest to that would be more restrictive in these funds. But if you go on to the HHS website in their general distribution portal, you can enter your 2018 financial information in there, and you may or may not receive additional grant monies here.
Right. But even though they already tested, they still have to spend the money the right way.
They do. They have to spend the money the right way, and you have to have that delineation that the money's not being spent in identical purpose as other relief measures like the PPP.
Or funding a library or anything like that.
Or funding a library, or like you've said a couple times, funding a boat.
Yeah. Well, that's because I have boats on my mind all the time. So what are you going to say, Gary?
I thought you wanted an airplane.
Well, that's on my list. It's just not at the top. Okay. So what is the Main Street Lending Program?
So the Main Street Lending Program is a program that's being sponsored and funded by the Federal Reserve. It's not out yet. It's been in the works for the better part of about a month now. It is a more robust program. It's more like the EIDL in that it's more of a traditional loan. There's no forgiveness. It's a loan for, I should have checked this, but I think you could have 50,000 employees and still qualify. So, and the minimum loan amount is $500,000. There's actually three components of it. And I'll spare the details of that. We can always get back to somebody. They have real significant interests in this. But it's one of three loans that you can get. And the minimum loan amount is $500,000. You have 4 years to pay it back. The interest rate is LIBOR plus 3%. So as I said earlier, I'm not sure what the current LIBOR rate is, but it's a minimum of a 3% interest rate because it's...
So clear up that word LIBOR for me.
Go ahead, Michael.
The London Interbank Offered Rate.
It's similar to the prime rate.
Got it.
And it's you know, a lot of times you hear loans are prime plus one, prime plus two, whatever. So LIBOR is a similar measurement of interest rates.
So can I ask a couple questions about this?
Yeah, sure.
Is it accurate that the Federal Reserve is not the federal government?
I don't know that for sure, but I do believe they are independent.
Because I think they are. So yeah. Then this would be like getting a loan from a bank.
Yes, and it will be, I was going to say that the banks are, like the PPP, the loan will be through a bank. And it's typically going to be a larger bank. And I have several clients that have been keeping their eye out for it because they're interested in it. And I've been in touch with bankers I know. And some of the big banks still haven't made a decision as to whether or not they're going to participate.
Okay. So if you need that extra capital, it's available, but it's a more traditional loan. What did you say the interest rate was on this, or it's not set?
It's LIBOR plus 3%.
LIBOR plus 3%. Okay. That makes sense. So there's that option there if you need that. Good, there's a cushion. I don't know how many of our guys, I mean, certainly there's a lot of our guys, most of our guys are doing over 500,000. So to get a loan like that, there might be a number of our guys that qualify for it, but I don't know if anybody.
I'm sorry. The minimum loan amount is 500,000.
I understand. Okay. But to cover their costs, what I'm saying is, yeah. You know, it's a higher end level of business. It's going to exclude some of our clients. We do have some of our clients doing several million a year. They might have that expense need, so they might consider that. And then there's certainly a lot of people listening who are not even our clients and probably not even in healthcare because of the number. You guys heard the numbers of people that have watched these shows before we started. It's blowing our mind that we've had like 3 million impressions on Facebook and 250,000 people watch these shows all the way through. So this is good information for people to have, even if you're not a doctor. What were you going to say, Gary?
I was going to say, there's another component of the amount you can borrow that's based on your EBITDA.
Okay. So, and you know all about that because of your ability to evaluate businesses and how much they're worth.
Right.
So, okay. Well, this has been a lot of information you guys have given us over the last 45 minutes. Do you want to sum it up or do you want to, is there more? What do we want to do with this?
Michael, you have anything else you want to add to this?
I don't. There's a lot of nuances and moving parts and pieces, and it's so practice specific in healthcare or business specific right now that we just encourage you to stay really close with your advisors during this time, your consultants, your CPAs, your attorneys, your bankers. Just be with them, be close with them, have them on speed dial almost, and figure out the best way that's going to work for you.
Okay.
I will sum up. I mean, the PPP right now, it's a nuance because a lot of states are still shut down.
Yeah. So,
you know, we can't even open up in a lot of industries.
Well, let me see if I can sum up. Okay. And you correct me if I'm wrong. So we talked about the PPP and the PPP start. It wasn't the first one in the game. The EIDL was, that was for a $10,000 forgiveness part of that loan, but the PPP came along and it's possible to have up to all of it forgiven, provided you follow the rules, which includes spending 75% of that money on payroll over the next 8 weeks. And then the other 25% can be split up to paying interest on your mortgage or rent and or utility costs, right? And maybe even some of the interest on equipment costs, correct? And then, so if you do that, that 8 week period, after that is over, you're gonna be applying to the bank for the forgiveness, and they're gonna let you know anywhere from 1 to 60 days later if you're forgiven. And if you're forgiven, that starts to affect some of the other things you may have participated in, like the FICA deferral. You can defer 50% of that, 50% of the FICA?
You can defer the employer match.
The whole employer match.
Of the FICA, correct.
Through 2021 and 2022, and by paying it back, but you can't keep deferring it after you're notified that you're forgiven for the PPP and the PPP program is over. So the EIDL, that because of that more traditional loan type feel, less people have applied for that, but there are still some people out there that are working with that. And then we have the HHS, which came along, which is Medicare saying, okay, how much did we spend last year on doctors? It's this much, let's divide it up and start depositing that money into doctors' accounts who participate with Medicare, but you have to attest that you're gonna spend that money a certain way to keep your healthcare facility functioning, correct?
Correct.
Okay, I'm almost done. So then we got the Main Street Lending Program, which is part of the Federal Reserve, which nobody really knows who they are, but it's a more traditional loan. And it's based on the London Bank, what their rates are, plus 3%. And that's the interest rate, correct?
Yep.
Minimum of 500,000, and you can defer it up to 30 years, or pay it out up to 30 years.
No, up to 40 years.
40?
Four.
4-0? Four. Oh, got it. I was a little bit off on that.
Yeah.
But I did pretty good. Would you say I got a B plus?
I give you an A. Hey, a solid A.
Solid A.
Okay. Well, I think then that deserves a drink. Agua. All right. Well, that's a lot of information for our guys. I really appreciate you being here, because I try to keep up on this stuff and I didn't know a lot of that stuff. And I know if I didn't, there's a lot of people out there that are smarter than me that might know some of that stuff, but there's probably things they learned listening to the show tonight as well, whether they're in healthcare or not. But since most of our people are in healthcare, Michael, thank you for coming on with my friend Gary here. Both of you have been a great resource tonight, and I think our listeners are going to appreciate it. And it's information like this from people like you that keep people tuning into this show and keep America turning, because we got to keep this country going. We don't want to jeopardize everything we've worked for the last 230 years. And I don't think this virus is going to do that to us. Any closing thoughts?
You summed it up very well.
Thank you. All right. Well, I want to thank everybody for listening. This has been Dr. Mike Carberry with the Daily.com AMI Doctors, the Daily Alert. We will be back tomorrow night. Make sure you tune in. But thank you to Gary. Thank you to Michael. It's been a great load of information. And thank you to HBK for lending you guys to us for this show. And we'll talk to you both very, very soon.
Thanks.
Thank you.
All right.